Hi, my name is Jean-Paul Tsotsos. I'm interim CEO of Chesapeake Gold and look forward to sharing more about our company.
Jean-Paul, good to see you. I haven't seen you for a while. You it was sort of just around PDAC time, wasn't it? So, how does PDAC for you? How did it work out? What were your takeaways?
Yeah, so first of all, I think we had about 26,000 people attend PDAC this year. That's a really good turnout. I know I went to Vancouver Roundup a few months earlier, and it seemed like the excitement around the mining industry was a bit slower. But as we rounded into PDAC, there was a big pickup. There was, the hallways were so busy that you were bumping into people. Thankfully, the story was all about precious metals. Gold price had made a significant move. And obviously Chesapeake Gold is a large repository of gold. So very topical. We had a booth for 2 days at the conference, and we had many attendees visit us just to hear our story.
Yeah, it was busy for sure. As you say, the corridors were full, and it seemed to be full of the right people as well. But I guess the big talking point was clearly the move in gold. It must have changed the mood immensely. Any thoughts on what the drivers of that were? I'm not sure. I found too many people who know.
Yeah, so I think basically it comes down to the Fed, right? There's a lot of talk about, there not being an interest rate move leading into March. But the tone started changing. Powell and you got the people that are checking all of his speaking notes to see how things are changing. And it became very clear during that week that there'll be three changes going on this coming year. So three rate drops. And then when that came out to the market, it was pretty obvious that whenever interest rates start to decline, the one thing that does happen every time is precious metals take off. And so we saw that again over the week of PDAC, and it's actually held those levels since then. So we're up near all-time record highs, close to 2,200 gold.
Right. And I say, and most CEOs of gold producers are saying, well, that's more than enough for us. That's a lot of free money in there, as it stands. What do you think the knock-on effects are? And I guess ultimately, how's it going to affect you?
Yeah, so one of the knock-on effects is usually silver runs as well, right? So Chesapeake not only has one of the largest gold resources, but we also have one of the largest silver resources. So in an environment like this, usually, as I saw when I used to work at BMO Capital Markets and covering these, junior golds and mid-sized golds, whenever the gold price started to move, the seniors first moved. Then it was the mid-size companies and then the explorers. And it tends to be that the explorers move much greater than the other ones. And so I remember back 2016, there was times where, it was over 500% increases in share prices. So we're not there yet. Still, it's trickling on its way down. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Chesapeake move in the future.
But this kind of cascade, the time frame between the initial and immediate benefits being producers, and then it kind of falling into the laps of developers. I mean, presumably through a bit of M&A and a little bit of moving the equities too, and then eventually down to the explore cos. Is everyone born equal in that scenario? Will all explore cos benefit? Is it?
No, definitely not. It all depends on where they are geologically or sorry, geographically. It all depends on the quality of the management, the quality of the asset, whether they have an executable project or whether they have some sort of plan. And those are the ones that typically move more and garner the most interest from investors.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and look, more of that. We'll get into that in a second. Because what I want to try and understand is what you're going to do to take advantage of the situation. But before we finish off with PDAC, I think one of the other kind of big takeaways, and I think for a company like you, it might be more important than most, is some of the new innovative technologies that were on display. Did you get a chance to kind of look or talk to any of those guys?
Yeah, so there was a couple that were around. They had booths either in the service sector group or I know one of them had a 2 day talk in the mornings, and a member of my team joined those talks to hear about that technology. The one thing that's very interesting is so at our booth we actually had the technology on display there, and so people could see the metatase ore unoxidized versus oxidized. And as you know, Matt, we've been working in the background at the lab, moving forward with the technology. Technology is really the one thing in our industry that could really make a difference. I've seen it in the past in the oil industry. if you look at the production that was happening in the US for oil and gas, at some point in the 70s, it peaked out and the production was on a decline. And, you know, the US made a whole bunch of decisions to not export crude oil outside of the country because of that concern that domestic production was going down. Fast forward, now we're in 2008 to around 2014, and they took two different technologies. One was directional drilling, and the second one was fracking. And they put those two pieces together, and then they were able to open the Permian Basin in Texas, as well as the Bakken Basin in the Dakotas. And what that did was the production profile that was coming down started to pick up again. And so you see that technology as a whole can really change the dynamics of the industry. And so, you know, following other people's technology, but also looking at Chesapeake internally, we're investing heavily in our technology and development of the oxidative leach technology within our company, because we believe that we have the solution to unlock that next level of growth.
Right. Here we're saying, and we'll probably sort of touch upon aspects of that during the rest of this conversation, but be sort of rather crude about it. I'm looking at the gold price moving significantly in the last month.
Yeah.
We think it will continue this year. I think it's primed to do that. You know, big fans of gold this year. We've been out of gold as an investment class for 3 years, and we are super, super excited about what we see, and we're back in gold again, and we'll continue to do so this year. But I, like many other investors, want to try and understand, how do you take advantage of this situation? You've got two. I get the excitement over Lucy, and we can talk about some of the high grade stuff that you're doing there, your new exploration asset, and also Metate is there with its, you know, huge resource, but with some technical aspects which you're going through the process of fixing now. How do you view both of those assets in a market like this? Because you look, if the technical issues get sorted, very, very attractive to majors, I suspect, mm-hmm. based on the M&A we're seeing. So how do you call it? How do you view it? How do you play it?
Yeah, so the most important thing is, you know, you go out, and even when I was at my previous employer, you put on a review, a screener of all the potential assets that are out there. And the first thing you notice, if you're a silver company looking for a silver asset, you know, Metate shows up as being one of the largest resources out there, right? So that puts us on the forefront. I've already seen a couple of the banks pick us up on their watch list. So they're starting to realize that there's a lot of potential at Chesapeake. Both CIBC and RBC over the last 2 months have put out notes, and we've been included in the watch list now of names to keep an eye on. And that gives you an idea of what the market is saying. You know, they're more interested in the gold. They're more interested in silver. We just got added to the silver index. And so, you know, there's a lot more eyeballs on our story. And the next step here is, you know, are there other companies out there that are looking to grow? Because at these kind of prices, you know, the next step in the cycle is there's going to be some consolidation.
Well, absolutely. And it's already started, right? You know, we're involved with a couple of M&A transactions at the moment. But coming back to the question is, how do you position yourself for success? So you being on watch list means you're obviously doing a job in terms of marketing and outreach, etc. But what's the end game here for you? Because is it attracting money, or is it attracting strategic with a balance sheet? Because it's a big project at the end mm-hmm. of this, potentially, right? So what's the name of the game?
Yeah, so with the technology at Metate's, we've shown that we're able to reduce the actual capital to build it. It's actually at a level of, you know, $360 million right now, which is an executable level internally. We have a bunch of different levers that were available that we can pull on. When I was at HUD Bay, for example, we did a prepay to develop the New Britannia refurbishment project. And, you know, those are based on what the gold prices are and what the assumptions the gold prices are going to be on the forward curve. And right now, those are quite high. So there's a good gap there that's available to you where you can raise money quite cheaply. And looking at our project, once we get through the PFS to the feasibility study, then it's at a stage where we can go to the banks, either, you know, raising debt, equity, or something, some form of alternative that's out there. And there's a lot of levers, and that's exciting prospect for Chesapeake. And then the other thing that's really executable right now is creating more value at Lucy. So last week I was actually down in Mexico. I had a chance to see the site. I went into the project. I actually walked our old holes from last year, and saw the potential on the ground and the outcrops and what our geologists are believing are starting to be the concentration methods for the mineralization. But I also got to see the drilling in the ground. We have a mag survey team that's out there doing geophysics, and then we did some geochemistry, and we're going to be doing some mapping as well. So we're doing the work today to increase the value of Lucy, to do the next level of work to continue to grow it. And with the grades that we're seeing in the first set of drill holes from 2023, you know, this is significant grades right at surface that people typically mine underground. So there's a lot of potential here to have a first-class asset.
Right, okay. And you've got a stack of money, like what, $22 million bucks at the last count, ish, available to you. Is the focus going to be on Lucy and the exploration upside that that brings? Or do you allocate some money in terms of prepping Metate? So for instance, like you've got a PEA on this alternative development plan of yours, right?
Yeah.
But PEA, you know, we need more. We need more certainty around it. Can you move that forward until you, before you've actually kind of cracked the technical code? Or do we have to, you know, focus in and hone in on Lucy?
Yeah, so I believe that we've shown in the results that we've released that the technology works, that we're getting oxidation. We are actually investing both on the technology and on Lucy. And the great thing about both of those investments is the cost of doing that is quite low. You know, to advance Metate's from PEA to PFS, if I was in any other project, I would have to do a whole bunch of drilling. The great thing about Metate's is the drilling's been done before. So we already had it at a PFS level back in 2016. So a lot of the bulk money that needs to be spent has actually been spent and sunk already. So the work that we're doing is much more cost efficient in the lab. And then at Lucy, drilling costs in Mexico is about a third of what they are in Peru, or even like a tenth of what they are in Nevada. So we have a pretty good opportunity to keep drilling and advancing Lucy while maintaining our one of our significant assets, which is our cash balance.
Right. Okay. Because I think most people are going to try and work out how to value, and it's a tough one with this kind of technical component, still in the works. I know you're going through the phases, and so far it's looking good, but you kind of got to work out where that kind of cutoff is in terms of, you know, the best time, money return. How do people value? How should they value you?
Yeah, so I would say that the value of Metate's is, it's very simple. When I was covering companies like this back in the day, we'd always look at what are the ounces in the ground. So what's the resource versus the market cap or the enterprise value? And right now we're probably trading between $2 and $3 an ounce. I know similar companies that are in the Junior Explorer, they're closer to $27 an ounce. I know when I covered back in 24, it was much higher than that. So the gold space has basically been unloved for a long time. And you need to realize that, in North America, maybe people don't actually understand how important gold is, but the rest of the world does, right? You see the central bank in China, Russia, India, they're stockpiling gold. They're constantly buying. You see that there's also a lot of buying for personal use. So jewelry and that aspects in China and India. And that's because they see the value. It seems like in North America, we're the only ones that are kind of lost our touch and understanding what that value is. But underlying every part of our economics in North America, at some point, gold has been a key part of growing wealth within our countries.
Well, I think central banks across the world are doing their thing. They've been buying for the last 3 years, actually, looking at the data. And equities is off globally. So, those two things aren't correlated at all. But there finally seems to have been some movement. And, you talk about the Fed, sort of driving that with regards to gold price, and that's great. And so we're going to come back to your view of, you know, how cheap you feel you are, $2 to $3 an ounce, whether you did an EV ounce calculation or not. You've got to talk about recoverable ounces. That's why it comes back to this, the time frame in which you decide where that cutoff point is for the best, an adequate versus the best is, and it's somewhere in between, I think, you know, where that cutoff is. What is the process you've given yourselves internally in terms of the time frame for making that decision?
Yeah, so the basis of the work that we're doing right now in the lab is going to give us an idea of where that sits. I believe in our PEA, we're focused on 70% gold recovery. That was our target. You know, 2 years ago, we announced that we can get close to 60% gold recovery through the oxidative leach technology. And the work that we're doing in the lab now is we're trying to work to get to that 70%. The question is, how much time does the oxidation process have to go through in order to get that 70%? But at the end of the day, it's going to be a calculation of economics, right? I can get it. If I leave the chemistry on there forever, we'll get 100% one day. Okay. If I pull it off early, we'll get less. So there is an amount of time where there'll be an optimum about the cost of the reagents, and then the time that we have to wait until we get our first bar of gold that would tell us exactly where the optimum point is to take the material off the oxidation pad and put it on the heap leach. And so that's what we're working on right now.
Right, and so that's a recovery component, and there's a cost component to that too.
Correct.
That's being done at the same time.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, it could be 72%. You know, the most important thing that I've learned is margins, right? If it ends up being 68% is our recovery rate, and that's going to give us the highest margin, right? Then, you know, it's okay. The PA said 70. If 68 is the best number to make the most amount of money for my investors and for my company, then it's going to be 68. But we're working through that right now.
Okay, fine. So we'll expect to hear something from you over the next, what, couple of quarters in terms of
everybody wants to know when the next set of met results
they
are coming out. And you know, we are working through the 180 days is what we've disclosed in the past, and then there's another 90 days after that of you know, cyanide leach. So you can kind of work your way back to see where that lines up, but you have to also remember I have a set of columns that are going through. So they're all coming off at different times and giving me their results at different times. So it's really the longest column is the one that I'm waiting for.
Okay, right. We'll hear when we hear, but your goal is to, when we're talking this year at some point, it's a question of how early this year. I'll try and work it out for people. on Lucy, obviously, it's kind of giving up some of the good stuff and reasonably shallow as well, which helps on the economics, etc. Just remind me, how much drilling are you aiming for this year?
Yeah, so we're currently in the program that we're running right now. We are aiming for 10 holes and 900 meters of drilling. You know, when you're out there in the field, that can also change a little bit. If there's something exciting, we'll put a couple more meters in. If we need to, we could even do an extra hole here or there. So ultimately, it turns out we're aiming for 900 meters, but we'll see where we get at the end of the day and the number of holes. So that's this program. And then if we have success, then the next step would be to follow up with another drill program.
Okay. Explain what's going on there. Because obviously 900 meters doesn't sound like a whole bunch and certainly not 10 holes. So tell me about the ore body.
Yeah. So we have basically, it's a long body. It's a skarn deposit. And we drilled a lot off on this side under a whole bunch of trenches. So trenches are, for those that don't know, we've removed all the soil, we went down to the rock, and then we actually took samples directly from the rock. And that gives you an idea of what's in the ground. So we've done that across the whole deposit. And in our first round of drilling, we only drilled under, let's say, maybe two-thirds of the trenches that we had. And the other third we hadn't drilled. And so this program basically, to the western side is where we had the least amount of drilling, but we did have three trenches over on the western side that we had not drilled under. So the focus at the first part of the program is to drill off those trenches underneath to see how the mineralization continues underground. to further extend it to the west. And then the trenches that we had on the eastern side, we've gone back, and the whole point is we're drilling one hole to the north and then one hole to the south over different sections. And the goal of that program is to understand where the mineralization is heading underground. So if the mineralization is, let's say, heading underground like this, if we're drilling like this, then we're going to get a hit. But if the mineralization is actually heading like this and we drill, we're going to miss. So I'm trying to minimize the amount of misses because that doesn't do anyone any favors. So this minimal program is to get a better understanding of the deposit, both at surface and the further extension to the east and west, but also to understand what happens underground. And once we have a better understanding of that, and then we add in the geochem sampling that can continue the mineralization to the one side, the geophysics, which will give us understanding of maybe the plumbing that's happening underground and where the heat source is and where the mineralization is coming from, as well as giving understanding if there's any structural aspects to the deposit. And then finally, the mapping will highlight other places where there's skarn that we can go back and do some channel sampling to continue to expand the mineralization. And so we're doing kind of a holistic view of this. We try to drill where we have data already. I'm not drilling holes where there's no data, because that's an unsuccessful prospective, right? So it's really methodical, the project that we're running there, similar to what I've done in my past as a geologist. And I give a lot of kudos to my team down in Mexico because they've been executing quite well.
Okay. And so remind me, the time frame there, decision-making after that, and the next program would start when?
Yeah. So I would expect, we get the last few holes back. It takes about, let's say, 6 weeks to get the results back from the lab. Then I would take the mag survey, the geochem program, and then the mapping and also the drilling. We'd look at it all in a 3D model, get an understanding of where the mineralization is going, what direction it's dipping under a surface. And then we would, start to plan the next program. And there'd be a release somewhere in that area once we have our information.
Okay. Good stuff. Well, Jean-Paul, I appreciate the update. One last thing here. For people near to this, obviously, I think people appreciate maybe the upside here is the fact that the market, precious metal, gold, has been under a bit of pressure for the last 3 years. I think equities have been under pressure for the last 3 years. There's also the kind of political factor of in terms of Mexico at the moment. We've got elections coming up this year.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look for these kind of release valves, these things which could be a step change if all goes according to plan. Mexican politics, what's that looking like at the moment?
So in Mexico, there's an election coming up in June. There's two candidates that are in the lead. One is from the Morena Party. Her name's Claudia Sheinbaum. She basically would be similar to status quo of what AMLO's been doing, the current president. And then the other, the candidate that's in the lead is, her last name's Galvez. And, I would say if she were to be elected, it'd be going back to what Mexico was prior to AMLO. So a lot of her policies and a lot of her views and her platform would bring a lot of Mexico back to what it was prior to the current president. So the way I see it is, whoever is elected, we're going to work with those individuals. Locally, the state owns the land. The state is the one that we work with when it comes to permitting and moving things forward. So I continue to work with those groups. And our plan is to work under work under whatever government is elected at the end of the day. In the background to continue to push forward Chesapeake's interests.
But is one any better than the other, or are they both, both kind of pro mining, or at least able to work with mining as an industry?
Yeah, so I think Mexico, they have, as Canada, lots of resources. And both in Canada and Mexico, they need to remember, because sometimes even Canada, we regret that our countries were born and built on the back of our resources. And I think that anyone with good judgment would realize that if they want their country to succeed on the global front, that investing and being an open government and an open country for investment always benefits not only the country, but the people in that country too, whether that's jobs, taxes, royalties, that feed back into the platforms that they want to push, you know, forward, whether it's healthcare, pensions, all of that comes from resource development and the work that's happening in the background, whether it's forestry or mining or farming.